Welcome to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue. We have a lot to talk about this morning, and we welcome you. And of course, we always welcome your thoughts. Roundtable at WAMC.org. On our panel this morning, we have the Times Union's Capitol reporter, Jimmy Vielkind. Good morning, Jimmy. How are you?
I am well, Joe. Good to see
Wonderful.
You.
Wonderful. Good to see
On
you,
a beautiful
sir.
Day.
It is a perfect, beautiful day.
Absolutely.
For many reasons, but there seems to be a special radiance here in the studio that we don't often have. Well, of course, we always have a radiance in the studio, but the special radiance that is coming from Rosemary Arnao.
I have only to say, oh, barf, to all of that.
Oh, come on. You're happy. And you're happy.
I am happy.
You're a grandmother.
I as of 11:56 last night, yes, I'm a grandmother for the first time. Showing pictures around. I'm as obnoxious as you can imagine.
Well, that is. Do you know Rosemary's a grandmother?
I do. I sent her a congratulatory message.
Yes, you did.
Grandma Ro. So we are very excited. So, excellent.
It's changed my whole view on everything now.
Are you going to start voting for school budgets again?
I will. Yes.
And you're not going to. You're not going to take us to task or anything today.
No, I'm good. I'm pleasant today.
Our other guest, Jimmy, could be the grandson of. He's very young looking of Rosemary.
Oh man. Wow. Okay, it was my weight yesterday.
Well,
my age today. Alan. Really?
What?
Well, I have a parenting milestone, and I have to mention because my daughter Brooke is with our wonderful neighbors Megan and their son.
Shout out to them.
I have to shout out to them. That's part of the deal. They're listening right now. But my daughter, and I don't know, was your grandson
son.
Or granddaughter?
His granddaughter.
Granddaughter. Is she a baby with hair or no hair?
Lots of hair.
Lots of hair. My baby was bald as a cue when she came out, and now we have a milestone. She's now 2 years, 1 month old. She finally has enough hair for 2 pigtails. Which
is a big
dutifully
deal.
Tied, right? And so this is my point.
Are
of
we going to get mail on this, Alan?
I hope not.
I should hope so.
I hope not. And
why?
I apologize to you, Rosemary, if I've ever said anything that would be seen as insulting or in any way deprecating. Because
do you believe that? Even
she hissed.
Yeah, yeah. She
I have
hissed.
So
she hissed.
Much. I have so much admiration for you, as you know.
All right. Well, let's put all of that into check and let us check. Go on with the
learned
the
conversation.
Items of the day. That's right. I want to start off with the Shield Law. Let us talk a little bit about this. Under fire over the Justice Department's use of a broad subpoena to obtain calling records of Associated Press reporters in connection with the leak investigation, the Obama administration sought yesterday to revive legislation that would provide greater protections to reporters in keeping their sources and communications confidential. Ultimately, this will be, I believe, reintroduced from
Schumer.
From Senator Schumer. Yeah. It was a bill that they asked him to reintroduce a version of the bill that he had pushed in 2009 called the Free Flow of Information Act, according to the White House. And this comes after the AP debacle, for want of a better term.
Wait, don't tell me. Wait. This is really weird, isn't it? Isn't there something very weird about it? It's the White House who's being accused of, and the Justice Department, of collecting all of this material from the AP. And now, all of a sudden, you know, the president is in his pajamas and he says, oh, my God, we're getting beaten up by this, comes out and says, let's reintroduce the Protect the Press thing. So this seems to be something interesting here.
But at the same token, if you recall, and as the New York Times reported this morning, this bill was previous legislation. It had advanced through the Senate's Judiciary Committee by, I believe, a 15-4 vote.
Yes.
And it essentially was moving at the same time that the WikiLeaks leaks
sure.
were occurring. So this is the summer of... of 2010 or 2011?
No, it was 2009, wasn't it, when it was first introduced?
It was 2009, but it was awaiting a floor vote in 2010,
okay.
and when the furor over the
Sorry.
WikiLeaks
right.
came. Yes.
And
Sorry.
So essentially this was withdrawn because Senator Schumer, astute political man that he is, said, you know, the public cast is against me. Now the public cast is different, and arguably there's going to be renewed momentum for this.
I think you're both right. I think the White House sees this as a sop. Okay, we screwed up here, so we'll make you be quiet this way. It's a
right.
sop
that was my
and a
position.
Bribe. And I think Jimmy's right
position.
That Schumer, as soon as he saw that, said, yep, and so here's my chance. And I say we take it any way we can get. The United States needs a
but
national shield.
But it was the president law. Who said Schumer should reintroduce it.
Right, right. Oh, no,
so
I think
right.
Yes, you are, as always.
Well, right, but the president can't introduce a bill. And besides, Senator Schumer represents New York, the media capital of the world. Sorry, Los Angeles, if you're listening, but I stand by that statement. So it's natural for him to do it, particularly considering that he had previously carried the bill.
And this New York does have a shield law, and the case that brought this to the fore originally was the New York Times case. It was the one that sent Judith Miller to jail for 86 days.
I'm sorry, but so my question is, if this law was in place, had been passed, was in place, would it have done anything to change the situation with the Justice Department and AP?
I believe not. There is no such thing as an absolute shield. I hope our listeners know what that is. The shield makes us sound like reporters are knight errants or something. But what it basically does is allow you to shield confidential sources from disclosure. But it's not an absolute guarantee. If a case is important, if it's a criminal case, and especially if it's a national security case, then the shield does not hold. This case, it might not have.
And I think that what this really would have done, though, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rosemary, is it would have given the Associated Press or any media organization the opportunity to be heard in court. So essentially, the federal government, rather than obtaining records or obtaining taps or obtaining information from telecom companies, and remember, that's really what we have to remember, is that, you know, my telephone is through Verizon. And if the federal government wants records of my phone, they're not going to ask me, they're going to ask Verizon or whomever is the telecom carrier. And there's no clause requiring Verizon to tell me that the federal government has issued that subpoena or requested those records. And I believe this
until
law—
Until after the fact.
Right. And I believe that this law would allow media organizations to be heard in court to argue, no, you should not give them, and then a judge will—
There is a caveat on it, though. In national security cases, the government is allowed, presuming it's the government who would be after this, is allowed to argue that they cannot disclose ahead of time because it would endanger the investigation.
Yes, but
this
that
is
has
clearly
to,
a case where that would have been used.
Yes, but I believe, if I read it correctly, it goes directly to the Attorney General himself in these Freedom of the Press cases. The Attorney General has to sign off on this, which puts it right back in the lap of the Attorney General of the United States, who reports directly to the president.
But the Attorney General in this case, you recall, has recused himself, or whatever you call it when an Attorney General, not a judge, does it, because he was also a subject in the investigation. So it still would have ended up in the hands of the deputy, who said, yeah, fine, take him. I think we would have ended up in this case in the same way.
I don't think
it's equal, but I still want the shield law. We need that protection we don't have.
So politically, what does this do for the president? Does it take one of the bad things that's happened over the past 2 weeks and mitigate it in some way, shape, or form?
He needs, like any political figure, embroiled in scandal. And essentially, the president has three things that are bubbling up against him. There's this issue of the Associated Press. There is Benghazi and renewed simmering anger over Benghazi, as well as the situation at the IRS, which to me is the most troublesome and
without
the most mainstream of the three. He needs to quickly move on, deal with it, and change the subject. Because what is Barack Obama not talking about right now? He's not talking about his push for immigration reform. Right. He's not talking about his push for the federal deficit. He's not talking about anything. He has to deal with these scandals. Right. He needs, just like Governor Cuomo in New York State, needs to take some swift action that is that can be sold as dealing with or addressing these issues, and then move back onto his agenda. If you're explaining, you're losing. And right now, this week, he's explaining.
That's an excellent analysis. I would also add that it's a neat position to put the Republicans in, because now they cannot say, oh, we're heroes of the press. Look, we're standing up for the AP
without
voting for that shield law. They're going to look like hypocrites to do it. So it's pretty sweet for Schumer, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. When you where Alan, were you going to say something?
I was, but I forgot.
Okay, that's all right. The action did not surprise me. The wording did with the IRS chief out. It seems when people like this leave, it's usually where they have decided they're going to fall on the sword and say, I'm going to do this for the betterment.
He got canned.
He got canned. Yeah. And that's the way they
and
said it. But, I just went flat out said, you're fired.
Call me a cynic, but I bet he offered his resignation and the president wanted it to be a firing. I think that's better for him.
I think that anyone in that position knows. Yeah, they're done. On the
they're
wall.
Out. Yeah, absolutely. But I just thought the wording of it was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking about
whatever the president wanted.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was going back to the press issue, you know, and I don't like to do the media project every day here, but I want to go back to that press issue and make the point that the American people are by no means lining up and to protect the freedom of the press of our institution. They are not. And I think that is a very important point to make here.
The press has about the same popularity as used car salesmen. Mm-hmm. They see us as being involved in sensational and celebrity.
Well, look at the POST
gossip.
Or NEWS, yeah. No question.
And why then should we have these extra protections? Why is Congress wasting its time passing special laws for us? But at the same time, this is the press function that turns out stories about wiretapping of citizens, the use of drones, the use of budgets to do things that are
invasion
nefarious.
Invasion of Cuba.
Invasion of Cuba, to go back in history little bit. Yeah, we absolutely need these protections.
Which the press
and you
ate.
Need to have, yeah, have to let whistleblowers come and talk to us.
And especially at a time where people's trust in government polls show is reduced rate. And of course, I'm biased here, but I think that an effective and robust press corps is a check on government. If you want to make sure there is no local corruption, subscribe to your local daily newspaper.
Sure.
We're going to take a quick break. We will continue our conversation. We welcome your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Jimmy Vielkind is here. Rosemary Armeo and Alan Shartok will continue our conversation after this short break.
Support comes from Troy Cloth and Paper, offering their own line of stationery, art prints, and apparel designs, as well as eco-minded silkscreen printing services in downtown Troy. TroyClothandPaper.com. Bennywater Ice and Spring Water, Kingston. Pure Spring Water, Coffee Service, and Mountain Valley Spring Water delivered to homes and offices. Local and family-owned. Bennywater.com. And Steve Lewis Subaru, Hadley, Massachusetts. A new and used Subaru dealer serving the Pioneer Valley, Hartford, and Springfield, offering new Subarus plus used cars, trucks, and SUVs. SteveLewisSubaru.com.
This is what I love about the breaks on the program is that we can figure out whose child we each.
But wait! Did your nephew, who's listening in Florida, send you a?
He sent me a little text, and
what'd
he said, "Punch that guy who said you looked as if you could be some older kid's grandmother."
And I said, "That's impossible because I'm 28 and Rosemary can't be a day over 35."
No, you're so.
I
right,
want him
Jimmy.
Every day.
It is. All right. Let us talk. We mentioned the IRS. Do we want to continue on that for a second? Does anybody have anything else to say about the IRS chief being canned?
Well, yes.
I think
it's an extraordinary potent story. I think that every one of us who has ever had an IRS bill understands what this can mean, that it can be arbitrary and capricious, and that, therefore, we really care about it. Benghazi, not so much. We know people don't really – it hasn't grown legs. And the press – fool on the press. But this IRS story, this is potent.
Well, yeah, and it just goes into – if you're a critic of Barack Obama, basically anywhere in the ideological spectrum, you could – this is such a classic, when you boil it down, example of government overreach, right, of government power. And the conservative case is that – Barack Obama believes in government and wants to make us all into socialists, blah, 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 blah. But here we have an institution of government, a very important one that we all interact with, and it's been arguably manipulated for someone's political ends. So this is very, very serious and very, very damning. This goes, it's similar in my mind to allegations of executives interfering with the Department of Justice or interfering with the FBI or interfering with the U.S. attorneys. It's all part of the same narrative. And I think that this one is going to have more legs than most of those because everyone deals with the IRS, as you said, Alan.
And Barack Obama knows it.
Right.
And you see the vitriol coming from him about how dare anybody do this. And he gets it, which also I think indicates that he ain't guilty. In other words,
well, I mean, come on, how you think that this went up to the level of the president of the
United
States?
Well, in the case of Tricky Dick Nixon, it certainly did. Well, we know it did.
And I, forgive me for not, that is not my assumption, and I'm sure we'll find out during congressional hearings, which I suspect will be long.
I think it's proof positive that Barack Obama did not have his hands on this, simply because he got so angry.
Well, how about Holder?
Well, that was my next question about Holder.
We mentioned that yesterday. Joe brought it up and said, do you think Holder will get it? And we all said, no. But, you know, I'm reading this stuff all day yesterday, and he is right out there. Congress is certainly angry at him, and I have to be thinking that Barack did not feel like he had his back, that Eric Holder had his back.
So the next question is, who's next if Holder goes? Now, attorney generals and presidents are very, very close. Who?
I'm chanting Preet.
Oh, Preet. Now,
favorite U.S. attorney from Manhattan.
No, I think if he really needs a player to defend him, it has to be the governor of Massachusetts. I think it does, because he gets a lot going. I asked him about this, and he said no, he didn't want to work for anybody else. So, but I think he would be the perfect person. He's a lawyer. He was general counsel of Coca-Cola. He did all of those other things. He would.
And
be
if the president of the United States comes to you and
says
I'm in a real bind here. We need you.
Sure.
Do you say no?
Sure.
So you are all buying into the idea that Holder's vulnerable on this now?
No, I was just presenting as hypothetical.
Okay. I don't know that I'm buying into the fact that he's vulnerable. I think his back's to the wall, definitely. I don't know that whether that will mean that he will leave.
Yeah.
But I certainly think over the last 2 days, when you spend most of your time testifying before
Congress.
If you're testifying, you're losing.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't look good for him.
No.
It'll go away.
You think it will?
Yes, and I think also it has to do with balanced government. And we have a Mitch McConnell, who I consider one of the more evil guys in government, who said my job is to get rid of this president. You know, is to get him out of office. And I think that the American people don't have a lot of taste, a lot of support for that kind of partisan stuff, which they smell here.
I think Jimmy makes a very good point of, you know, we don't have, until we have the congressional hearings, but until then, we do not have a direct link from the Obama administration to actually, and your point is well taken, Alan, of saying, do this on behalf of IRS, do this. And until that, it doesn't seem to be an overly damaging issue as one that they can come out of.
There's a saying at the state capitol that someone much older and wiser than me told me.
How much older?
His name rhymed with Tartak, I believe. But the saying was essentially that the operating theory of state government is incompetence first, conspiracy second.
Right.
Always assume someone screwed up through idiocy, through low-level mistake. Always assume that before you assume some giant overarching conspiracy.
Whoever
guy was, he was a genius.
An absolute genius. When you look at the issue of just overall of how the IRS is viewed, I mean, they can never really come out of this as being the good guy, though, right? Where you feel bad.
I've always thought of the IRS as the good guy, Joe.
Our friend there.
Here on the radio, we will say we feel that the IRS is a fine, upstanding agency.
Well, yes. This radio station had an audit a number of years ago, and the guy stayed with it for a long time, and it was during, I believe, a Republican time. And we thought that, you know, it was certainly possible because they were looking under everything that came out clean as a whistle. But you know, it's a harrowing time for any American to go through that.
Yeah, it's just a good policy not to cheat the IRS. Just pay.
We're going to
pay the $2.
Yeah,
absolutely. We're going to take a quick break and get the latest news from NPR. When we come back, we have a lot of stories to discuss, and we will do just that. We welcome your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, and Jimmy Vielkind. We welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. A lot of stories to talk about. One that I know Jimmy's been working on and interested in hearing what he has to say about the report that came out yesterday from state ethics regulators on Assemblyman Vito Lopez.
Yeah, it was quite a read. 70 pages from the ethics watchdog in the state, JCOPE, the Joint Commission on Public Ethics.
The so-called ethics group in the state.
The so-called.
I mean, they themselves have been under tremendous critical analysis.
Ethics with an asterisk?
Arguably. And then 7 pages from the Staten Island District Attorney, Dan Donovan, who was appointed as a special prosecutor to review whether any of the alleged actions against Assemblyman Vito Lopez, a Brooklyn Democrat, rose to the level of criminal charges. And now Lopez, we first found out about Vito Lopez in the summer of last year. I think it was August 24th. That he had groped and made inappropriate comments and done all kinds of inappropriate thing toward female aides. And so this prompted a flurry of inquiries, which have finally, as of yesterday, borne their fruit. And the details were, for lack of a better word, icky. You know, my favorite, I shouldn't use the word favorite, probably the most salacious was that at one point, Lopez pressured one of his female employees to put eye drops in his eyes. And in the course of doing so, she allegedly contracted pink eye.
Yeah, that's a gross. I like when I read that, I was like, yeah.
So okay, we.
I think that was the worst.
It's fairly.
I thought the worst was when he said to the staffer, "Touch my tumor."
Yeah,
that was pretty bad on his stomach.
You're absolutely right.
70 pages. It was. There was a lot of icky stuff in there.
As you said, quite a read.
Yeah,
like the Ken Starr report.
Yeah, but I think what's more interesting, because I think most people gathered that Mr. Lopez is somewhat sleazy, is what the reports found about how top officials in the state assembly handled allegations from these four ladies. Now, two of them came forward, I believe, in the latter half of 2011 and made these allegations, but they were not initially referred to the Assembly Ethics Committee, which under the chamber's sexual harassment policy is the appropriate step, that there should be some sort of inquiry. And instead, there was a settlement. And there was a confidential settlement with these two ladies, which Mr. Donovan, the Staten Island District Attorney, who is a Republican and a former Republican candidate for Attorney General, said, quote, encouraged Lopez to then, after this settlement was inked and the confidentiality clause was signed off and initialed, to then engage in a pattern of alleged harassment against two more employees. So I think that the fallout to me that I will be interested in is what changes, if any, happen within the top leadership of the Assembly. And that's a chamber that has been led by Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, a Manhattan Democrat, for, I think, certainly well over a decade.
I think the longest service.
Second to Oswald Heck.
Uh-huh.
O.D. Heck from Schenectady. Yeah. And so that's going to be the interesting fallout at the Capitol. There are going to be, as you alluded to, Alan, questions about JCOPE. It's going to renew questions about JCOPE. Already there are people who are pointing out, well, why did JCOPE in its report pass judgment on Vito Lopez's actions? Because JCOPE alleges that Vito Lopez violated the public officer's law. And it's going to be up to the Legislative Ethics Commission to determine whether those findings are accurate and to levy a penalty, what penalty, if any, they deem appropriate, which is maybe a head-scratcher, but it's just the way New York's ethics laws work.
I'm sorry, Joe. Jimmy, I think you have to tell everybody why Vito Lopez was so important. This was not some backbencher. This is a very powerful man when all of this broke.
Vito Lopez was the chairman of, I believe, the largest Democratic county organization in the country.
He was a kingmaker. You wanted to be a judge? You want to be a judge? Go see Vito.
You wanted to be a judge? Or as one of the ladies in the report said, you want to get a dog permit in Brooklyn? You got to go see Vito. So he essentially controlled the Brooklyn delegation, a very large delegation. He controlled a very large county for the purposes of electoral politics. You're running for mayor of New York City. You're a Democrat. You want Brooklyn? You got to go see Vito. So he was a kingmaker, indisputably. And already after these allegations first surfaced last summer, he was stripped of the party leadership in a in a move. He stepped down as chairman and someone else succeeded him, Frank Sedio. He was censured formally by the speaker. He was barred from employing young women, and he was stripped of his chairmanship of the housing committee. And in Albany, the way things work at the Capitol is your committee determines not just your influence on the flow of legislation that comes to the floor, but also who you can raise money from, which is good government groups will howl about, probably with good reason. But, you know, if you're the chairman of the housing committee and you have influence over what housing policy gets written, lots of developers are going to come see you. And so there's literally this informal ranking of committee assignments based on who based on the resources of the people you're essentially overseeing.
But the reason I asked you to tell us why he was so important then, not now, not so much now, because they basically stripped him of all the rest of it, but then he was so powerful that the speaker defended him. And they found some money. Didn't they find, wasn't there some kind of a legal representation?
Well, as I said, there was a confidential settlement with these first pair of complainants. And it involved $103,000 of taxpayer funds.
Taxpayer money.
$32,000 of money from Mr. Lopez.
I have to say that listening to all this, it's fascinating and it's heartening to me because there is nothing new about men in power taking advantage of young women, or women, not ladies, Jimmy, just a little correction. And the gentlemen have to stop doing that. And increasingly, that is happening.
I would take some exception to the word gentleman in this case.
That's I said it ironically, that women spoke out and that a powerful man was actually held to task for it, which must have been a shocking to him as it was. Do you remember Senator Packwood in the our national legislature? It was he did nothing more in harassing women than had been done by men for decades in this country, and the culture has changed. And he was caught. He was the one who was sacrificed. And this is a warning to people going into the state legislature that there's a minimum standard for behavior.
And I guarantee you that 10 years from now you're going to see it again, or 5 years from now you're going to see it
Jimmy
again.
Jimmy has a butt.
I'm contorting my face because I think there is a butt. I mean, we have seen this. We saw allegations of rape against Sheldon Silver's top counsel, believe, 2005.
Something like that.
And there was no substantiation of a rape allegation, but I believe the person in question did plead to some sort of charge. After that incident, this policy was put in place. This policy that said any allegation of sexual harassment against the member shall immediately be referred to the Assembly Ethics Committee. And again, what is interesting is, as we're really parsing the details, there was a big debate about, well, these women came forward. Is it an allegation? Is this a formal complaint? Did they insist on it not going to the Assembly Ethics Committee? Well, yes, no. What do we say to the public? And the conclusions of these reports are fairly damning on this issue. The Staten Island District Attorney, again, Mr. Donovan, said that the Assembly seemed preoccupied with protecting its own public image and minimizing harm. So
it sounds like the White House and the State Department on Benghazi.
Is there truly a culture change? And I think that is the question, and I do question it.
I do think there is a culture change because they're sitting there figuring out how they have to do their how they have to handle this. This is Anita Hill all over again. She came forward. Did that make her a hull? You know, it's women who speak up do so at the risk of their own reputation being hurt, at the risk of never getting a job in the legislature again, and those are kind of good jobs to have in Albany. Sure. It's a risky thing. We were taught, my generation was taught, you just kind of deal with it, keep it to yourself, and move on. And women don't do that anymore. That's a good thing. So
it seems also, I mean, to change that whole culture, but then you need more women legislators.
Yes, sir.
Think
about being a woman legislature in New York. I think that would be very hard. Jimmy, I'd like to hear you talk about this. That's a hard atmosphere. It's a very hierarchical and strict male leadership role. I mean, it's really hard not to be marginalized.
Yes, I think that's a very
fair
point.
You're a new woman in the legislature.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt, I'll let you talk, but I mean, I interviewed Olympia Snow the other day, and I mean, she said the same thing about after 40 years in Congress and in the Senate feeling that way.
Well, we're hopeful that, you know, there are 20 senators now. Olympia was there when it was, she was really, really in the minority.
In the
There's
beginning,
now
yeah.
at least a critical mass.
Go ahead, Jimmy, I'm sorry.
There are some positive progress on that front. Now, for the first time, we have a woman leading a legislative conference in Albany. Democrats. Senator Andrea Stewart-Cousins is the head of the Senate Democrats. And Senate Democrats say that she should be the leader of the Senate chamber. She should be the Senate president because, and not to get into an old argument that we've had, not even an argument, but a discussion we've had of there are 33 elected Democrats in the state Senate, but because of a power-sharing agreement, a breakaway faction of Democrats in concert with Republicans holds control of the chamber. But that symbol, right? Mm-hmm. So if this had happened in the Senate Democratic Conference, exactly the same thing happened, I have to think that Ms. Stewart-Cousins' posture would be very different, perhaps, than Mr. Silver's posture. And also, I think that you do have enough women in office and enough women in that Democratic conference where to say, hey, Shelley, what are you doing? This is not acceptable.
Yeah.
This is not acceptable. Changes will be made. Or you will be the change that is made.
It's even at an office politics level, going up against a male leadership structure is intimidating. And I know that many women, because I've been mentor to them, have not wanted to do that. I want to get involved in office politics. I just want to work. And that mentality does not work in an office. You have to deal in the politics. And so then you're talking about the state legislature, where politics is the business, as well as you have to deal with them to have any kind of say.
On the other hand, men and women are men and women. I think Jimmy will know what I'm talking about. There are at least a few.
I think I get that, too.
Well... Yeah. Well, no. What I was going to say is that there are men and women in the legislature who hook up.
There are men and women who hook up everywhere.
Yeah, so that this gets to be dangerous when you say, you know, when you say that this is always a matter of sexual harassment. It isn't. People find ways of finding each other, and that includes women senators.
But here, there's a power dynamic, Alan. We're not talking about two peer legislators. We're talking about a person who had direct control
over
the
salary and career. I couldn't agree with you more
on
that. I just want to put this one caveat on the table, which is that we all know about boyfriends and girlfriends, and there, too, is power that's involved. And I don't think it always speaks attractively of people.
Boy, I'm not following this. I understand that there's boyfriends and girlfriends, and I understand
and
that
boyfriends and boyfriends and girlfriends and girlfriends.
Yeah, and all of the rest. But this, we're talking about power relationships office, in this case, the state legislature.
No,
being
but
the
you
office,
keep
so
bringing that back.
Things.
I have no doubt about that. You're absolutely right about that. I'm just simply saying on other levels, this kind of dynamic exists. So don't try to keep throwing me into this. You don't understand when an older guy hits on a younger woman. I do understand that, and I think it's reprehensible. I'm just simply saying there are other places in which power is shared in the legislature in interesting, dynamic ways. That's all.
Sex in the legislature. Okay.
I think this is a
coming
great,
HBO.
I think it's a great time for a break, and we'll hash this out, and we'll be back and talk about some other stories, including about the mayor of Albany. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from Albany Marriott with 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge, and airport transportation. Facebook, Twitter, or albanymarriott.com. Williams College, supporting a community of learning in the Berkshires with lectures, exhibitions, and events. Williams.edu. And Kenco Work and Play Outfitters, Route 28 Kingston, locally owned outdoor outfitter supporting kayaking, hiking, archery, fly fishing, and more in the Hudson Valley since 1982. atkenco.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue along with Alan Chartok, Times Union Capital reporter Jimmy Vielkind, and University at Albany journalism professor Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org. And we've got about 8 or 9 minutes left, and I know we discussed this yesterday, but I want to talk a little bit more because the mayor of Albany made it official yesterday that he is not running for a seventh term, I believe. And it now comes... his sixth term. He would have gone for a sixth term.
Right.
Okay. So now the fallout in the sense of what is going on within the Democratic Party. The party has given their endorsement to
City Treasurer Kathy Sheehan.
Right. Corey Ellis was upset about that, the other Democrat running.
Right.
And here we go.
Well, yeah, it's a here we go situation. And as my colleague Jordan Carlio Evangelist, who's really has his nose to the ground on all of these things, pointed out yesterday in our editions when he reported the news of the mayor's decision not to run, the fact that the mayor held off in announcing publicly for so long has made it, I think, to use Jordan's words, almost prohibitive for people to campaign. Could you imagine if on January 1, Jerry Jennings had said, "That's it, babe, I'm done, I'm not running again." There would have been dozens of people in the field, dozens, politically ambitious people who would have come out of the woodwork to discuss and to try and figure out how to become mayor of Albany. Because in this city, apparently, becoming mayor is a generational opportunity. It comes literally once in a generation. You know, there have been now two mayors of Albany in my lifetime. And now there will be a third. So it comes down to the two people who had the chutzpah to, you know, begin talking about a campaign and begin setting up the bones of a campaign while Mayor Jennings was presumed to be seeking re-election. And those are Kathy Sheehan, the city treasurer, and Corey Ellis, a ward leader from the city's uptown neighborhoods. And there's a racial dynamic that's going to play out here. Mr. Ellis is African-American. He's previously sought the mayoralty. Ms. Sheehan is a white woman, and she is a woman. She would be the first woman to be elected mayor of the city of Albany. And she's seen as representing and having the support of a lot of the city's progressive, sort of progressive white liberal types, who are an interesting and a core constituency in a Democratic primary. And in 2009, when Ellis ran against Jennings, we had a similar dynamic in the race. We had Sean Morris, then the Common Council president, run in a primary against Corey Ellis and essentially have Ellis become the dominant opposition candidate to Jennings. But the marriage of those two bases was an uneasy one. And here, based on funds and based on the fact that the Albany County Democratic Committee formally endorsed Ms. Sheehan last night at its annual spring meeting, perhaps she will have the dominant candidacy. But then, of course, the dynamic is thrown because you do not have an incumbent. So I think this is going to be a very interesting race. I think that and Jordan is going to be all over it. And I think that just the fact that you're going to have a change in administration, you're going to have new ideas, you're going to have a true airing of the policies of the last 20 years in this city come out in this election. People should be thinking about, do we want a convention center? This is something Jerry Jennings has pushed. Do we want to have downtown be an entertainment district? Do we want to do more to encourage mixed use? What do we want to do with the comprehensive plan that the city has just done? What do we want to do with 787? Are we leaving 787? Should we look to it? What are we going to do in our neighborhoods? What should be our posture on policing? What should we do about our public school system? These are all really important issues. And I'm not critiquing the mayor or praising the mayor in any way. I don't think that's my place. But these issues will all be aired in this election. And I think that alone will be good and healthy for the city.
And there's one more dynamic here, and that is the relationship between the capital city of the state of New York and the executive who's sitting up there on the second floor, Andrew Cuomo.
And of course, Mayor Jennings yesterday in leaving touted, one of the things he touted was that when I came in, I think 74% of the property in Albany was tax exempt. Now it's down to something like 60%. And he's right. He makes a good point. And Albany city officials have for years argued that they are hamstrung by the fact that the Capitol is here, that the Harriman campus is off the tax rolls, that the Empire State Plaza is off the tax rolls, that so much property is tax exempt. So you're absolutely right, Alan, that the dynamic between the state executive and City Hall is a fascinating one. And one of Mayor Jennings' key assets was a good relationship with Andrew Cuomo dating back over a decade.
And frankly, with George Pataki before him.
Right.
Right.
In other words, you better get along with it.
So the rumor has been for months that if the mayor decided that he was not going to run again, that he would get a job within the administration.
Yes, I've heard that rumor. Mayor Jennings was asked about that. He said he has not had any discussions. This is a persistent rumor for basically any elected official who decides not to run, and we should note that. Some of whom get jobs, some of whom do not get jobs.
Would it be a problem, Jimmy, if he did get it? Is there something that should exclude him from state service? He was a pretty good mayor.
No, not necessarily. No. If we think about mayors in this area, Al Jasinski.
No, only that it aided would have aided the decision.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But let's remember that what we don't know is what we don't know.
Right.
But well, there may be stuff lurking in the background that we just don't know.
I think that from the people I've spoken to and the people Jordan has spoken to, the key factors that weighed on the mayor were if he was ready to go, how the exit would come, right? At a certain point, you make the decision, and then you have to figure out the mechanics of the exit. And if the mechanics are prohibitive, then you have to change your decision, which is interesting and arguably awful. But that's the way things go sometimes. And so an appointment, I think that we would have heard about that. And I think that might have come because that, in a way, is an answer to the mechanics of the decision question.
Makes it easier.
Yes. And there are this talk of several state posts for which Mayor Jennings might be considered. But he said yesterday publicly he doesn't know what he wants to do. Right. He's a man in his 60s, 65, I believe.
Time, yeah.
Yeah. You know, well, when I'm 65, I don't want to do anything.
Well, but would you
if I can afford it? And he certainly can afford it.
Well, Alan, what is your thought on that?
But but there's one other variable here, and that is whether or not he could have won.
Well, that is a good question.
That is something that this brilliant politician
certainly
would be thinking about.
Right. Certainly the worst scenario for him would be to run and lose. And so that's certainly something.
Bad way to exit,
That's a terrible way to exit public life. But even the fact that we had two candidates announced ready to go, I think that one of the things that the mayor certainly must have weighed was, does it appear that I'm being forced out? And I don't want to appear to be forced out. I want to leave on my own terms, right? And so, again, that's why I get into the mechanics. And so an appointment would have been a great way to say, you know, I had every intention of running and serving you, but I believe I can serve you better as the commissioner of blah, blah, blah.
You know, I want to go back to that governor business because the governor has had a certain amount of problems with the some of the upstate mayors, one in particular in Syracuse, who has been criticizing him for being less than helpful in terms of the way that they're running their cities. So to get a guy like this into a position where he could be helpful could only be good for him, for the governor.
We are going to wrap it up for today. We will be back tomorrow. We'd love to hear from you. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. Jimmy Bielkind, thank you very much for being with us. TimesUnion.com to find out more. Rosemary Armeo, always great to see you. Again, congratulations on being a grandmother.
Thank you.
That's so cool. And Alan, as always, we'll see you.
I'm going to the mattresses.
Excellent.
Because, Rosemary's nephew's after me. I'm going to the mattress.
Gotcha. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.